This is Football Nation. Todd DeVries and Bill Enright bring you the latest trends from the NFL. Headlines, stats, fantasy previews, and more right here on Football Nation.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Football Nation on Patriots.com Radio. Bill Enright here along with my main man, Todd DeVries. Our producer, Kevin Collins, is standing by somewhere. We're moving one step closer to Super Bowl 47. Luckily for the Patriots, they were able to rest up and watch some of their potential opponents over the wild card weekend. And Todd, what did you think of the games?
Oh, what a letdown, Bill.
A little boring?
It was kind of 0 for 4. I mean, quick breakdown, and we'll get through them in a little more detail, Bill. But yeah, exactly. The sad music there. You had that, you know, you had the rematch between the Texans and the Bengals. And I'm still waiting for Andy Dalton to target A.J. Green in that one.
Yeah.
Right? And then that one's over. You're like, okay, you know, kind of a snoozer. And then you move on to Green Bay, Minnesota. About an hour before kickoff, the starting quarterback for the Vikings is out, and Joe Webb is in there on the field of Lambeau Field. You knew that was over before it started. The next day, Baltimore, you had the whole Ray Lewis hoopla. They kind of dismantled the Colts in what was kind of a lackluster game. And then the final game, which seemed to be the most intriguing game, you kind of had a sick feeling in yourself watching RG3 gimp around and ultimately get hurt. So kind of a downer. Would you agree?
I totally agree. And, you know, the wild card weekend is something that I look forward to every year as a huge NFL fan. And typically, I love all the games. And for me not to really enjoy any of the games this past weekend, it was really disappointing for me. Game did I find exciting, entertaining, no close finishes. They were pretty much lopsided in all of them. I mean, the Redskins were up 14-0 at one point, but never did I really say, well, the Seahawks are out. Redskins are going to pull off the upset.
Well, you know, and last week, you know, we have a little fun on the show. We make our predictions, and we predicted all four winners to advance. And then we said,
favorites.
Oh, we can't. Yeah, and then we said, yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. We can't pick all four favorites. That's no fun.
No
so we
fun.
Went and, you know, changed one of our picks to the Colts over the Ravens. But sure enough, what happened? All the favorites won, you know.
Yeah, I kind of twisted your arm a little bit on that one. I didn't want to pick all of the teams that were projected to win. That's not a lot of, you know, that's not really good.
Yeah.
Makes for good radio.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We kind of went with an upset with the Colts, and we were upset with our upset.
Yeah, we were upset with our upset. And we also did say that once Ray Lewis announced his retirement plans, that kind of threw a wrench into our upset pick, too, because you knew they were going to be fired up playing for Ray Lewis in his final home game.
Yeah, we'll dive a bit deeper into some of the wild card games in just a bit. Plus, you know, other than the playoffs, Todd, there's been a lot of craziness from the NFL just these last few days. You know, the hunt for head coaches continues for teams like the Eagles, the Browns, the Chargers, Jaguars, all looking for coaches. Now, some college coaches decided to stay in school. We know Chip Kelly decided to stay at Oregon, and Bill O'Brien stuck at Penn State. But, you know, Syracuse's Doug Marrone gets the head coaching job with the Bills. Plus, you know, Rex Ryan showed off his creepy Mark Sanchez or his creepy wife tattoo with a Mark Sanchez jersey. We'll have some fun talking about that. The turf in Washington at FedEx Field, giving a lot of problems. You're very upset with that field over down there in Washington. And plus, you know, we'll look at the remaining playoff teams, and we'll try to rank them in three categories, passing, rushing, and overall defense, as we look ahead to the divisional round of the NFL playoffs.
Yeah, let's hope for some better matchups this week, Bill. I do have my doubts in the AFC. I think we all see the collision course happening between Denver and New England in the AFC. I'm hoping we get a couple awesome games in the NFC. I think it's a lot more wide open right now. You could make the argument, really, for any of the four teams to make it to the Super Bowl at this point. So I think the NFC is where it's at this weekend.
Sure.
And I think the inevitable is going to happen in the AFC. But we'll save all that kind of stuff for a little later in the show and for Thursday's show as well.
Now, you mentioned earlier the Bengals and Texans met in the first round of the playoffs last year, did the same thing again this year. The Texans won 19-13, and that is who the New England Patriots will play this weekend. They'll get the Texans up there in Houston, who we all know were demolished in Foxborough the last time the Texans traveled up to Gillette. But, you know, what did you take away from this game? Obviously, Arian Foster played phenomenal, 140 yards and a touchdown. Was it more of the Bengals not looking like a playoff team, or is the Texans kind of coming back to life? Because remember, Todd, this is a Houston team that lost the last two games of the season. They had the first round bye pretty much locked up. They needed to beat the Vikings at home. They needed to beat the Colts, who had really nothing to play for at that point. Instead, they lose both of those games, and then we saw them play the Texans in the wild card weekend.
Yeah, I wasn't overly impressed with the Texans, quite honestly. I mean, if you think about what they did, Bill, they were up 9-7
right
at halftime. Three field goals. They kept getting into the red zone and petering out, you know?
Yeah.
That's not going to work against Tom Brady in Foxborough this weekend. They're going to have to figure out a way to punch it into the end zone. So as I'm watching them, you know, they're not overly impressive. They're moving the ball decently with the running game. And then they, you know, they're settling for field goals. Then you see Matt Schaub throw a terrible pick six to Leon Hall. And it's 9-7 at halftime. But the thing at halftime, and again, you and I are fantasy football guys, which always plays into it as well. But how in the world, if you're a Cincinnati Bengal, how can you not target your best offensive weapon one time in the first half of that game? They did not throw it in the direction of A.J. Green one single time in the first half. Maddening, Bill.
And it's not like the Texans have these all-pro cornerbacks. I mean, the Texans were getting burned the last few games, all the way dating back to that Thanksgiving game against the Lions. They were getting burned in their secondary. So for A.J. Green to come out in the first half and not record a single reception, not get targeted once by his quarterback, Andy Dalton, wasn't just maddening. It was head-scratching. Like, what was the Bengals' game plan? Were they just looking to target their tight end, Jermaine Gresham, the whole game? Did they just want to run the football with Jarvis Green Ellis? Like, what exactly was their game plan not using their number one weapon on offense?
I don't know. At least they came to their senses at halftime. And if you look at the final stat line, Bill, he did wind up with 11 targets, which means all of them came in the second half.
Right.
Five catches for 80 yards. And one of those targets, Andy Dalton, who just had a woeful performance, 14 for 30, 127 yards, no touchdowns and interception. Wide open, Bill.
Yeah, he had him at the end of the game.
A.J. Green, wide open, and he overthrows him. So, you know, there's your ball game. And we talked about it, you know, ad nauseum last week. Something always goes wrong with the Bengals.
Right.
You know, the Bungles. Yeah. They just can't get it done. They haven't won a playoff game since the days of Boomer Esiason, and it just doesn't seem to matter. It's just, even if they're the better team, they'll find a way to lose, and that's exactly what happened. So, you know, the Texans move on, and good luck. They're going to have to play a hell of a lot better than they did last time they played the Patriots, and they're going to have to play a hell of a lot better than they played last week. You know, they were not impressive. 19-13, too many field goals. Not impressive at all.
The only thing that was impressive was Arian Foster's performance. I mean, he carried the ball 32 times, and he averaged a little under 4.5 yards per carry, 140 and a touchdown. But again, you know, the Texans, are they going to score enough points to keep up with the Patriots? I just don't think they have that boom type of potential on their offense. Matt Schaub is not an overly exciting player. He had 30 completions against the Bengals, but I just don't know if this Texans team can really keep up with the Patriots.
I don't think so. We'll break this game down all sorts of different ways on Thursday, Bill. We don't want to get into our preview just yet, but you know, we just want to recap these games. And I just think that both of these AFC games, the winner's moving on, and they're going into a really tough environment, both at Mile High for the Ravens and Foxborough for the Texans. I think they're going to be in big trouble next week.
All right, let's look at the Bengals for a second here. Their fan base, did this team this year exceed the expectations for their fans, or was it a disappointing year for Cincinnati?
I think it was deja vu, wasn't it?
I think so, too.
The same exact result as last year.
I mean, last year, I think they exceeded expectations by getting into the playoffs. They had a rookie quarterback, rookie wide receiver, you know, Cedric Benson as their running back. Not a whole lot of firepower on offense. Their defense is kind of what held them together last year. So I think they exceeded expectations last year, but this year was a disappointment, even though they made the playoffs.
Yeah, again, like you mentioned, they had won. They'd been hot down the stretch. Right.
Yeah.
They beat the hated Steelers to kind of steal that final spot from the Steelers to get into the playoffs, and they faced a team, although they had to go on the road, a cold team. The Texans were ice cold. They were, you know, ripe to be beaten, and they couldn't get it done. and they look terrible. I mean, if I'm a Bengals fan, I am starting to wonder about Andy Dalton. I know it's only one game, Bill, but he really was unimpressive. I mean, he was really unimpressive. You know, the Baltimore Ravens fans have their gripes about Joe Flacco, who just can't seem to get him over the top and kind of comes up small in some of the games. Now, again, he had a pretty decent game against the Patriots last year, a couple drop passes in that AFC title game. But for the most part, Joe Flacco, there wasn't a lot of confidence from a Ravens fan when he talked to Ravens fans about Joe Flacco. And I'm wondering, he's only 2 years into his career, but I'm wondering if Bengals fans might start to formulate a similar thought about Andy Dalton.
Right.
He came up small. And he just had that look, and this is a terrible thing to say as an analyst, but he just kind of had that deer in the headlights look, didn't he?
Yeah, he certainly did.
He didn't look confident. He didn't know what was going on. He was even putting his hands up to his helmet like he couldn't hear half the time.
Yeah.
It was very odd, very strange.
How about that second game on Saturday, the Green Bay Packers 24-10 over the Minnesota Vikings? And Todd, I was paying attention to the odds before this game, and it started off with the Packers being, I think it was like an 8-point favorite over the Vikings. And then the news came out that Christian Ponder wasn't going to play and that Joe Webb would be starting for the Vikings. And the line like jumped up like 3 or 4 points in a matter of minutes. So I think Vegas kind of knew that once Christian Ponder was out of that game, it would be pretty much a Packers show, Packers taking it to the Vikings.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened.
And, you know, and like the rest of us, I'm watching the pregame and the postgame from the Bengals game and the pregame for the Vikings game.
Yeah.
They're all trying to make the argument, Bill, that, well, now the Packers, they haven't been preparing for Joe Webb all week.
Right.
This is going to catch them by surprise. And this is going to be even better for Adrian Peterson. You know, this is going to even give him the ability to have more rushing yards than normal. And I'm scratching my head thinking, what are they talking about?
That didn't make any sense.
No, I mean, you figured that, yeah, the first couple of drives, Joe Webb might run around a little bit and the Packers might have to adjust. But how's it going to help Adrian Peterson when you can just put 10 in the box if you want to? The guy can't throw the ball.
Right.
How does that help Adrian Peterson? I did not understand that at all, the thought process there. And, you know, it kind of turned out to be true. AP or AD, if you want to go with his nickname of all day, 99 yards on the day, which is well below his average, obviously.
Yeah, he had, 199 yards against this Packers team just back in Week 17. And then I think the first time they played him this year, he finished, 214? 200,
something like that.
Yeah, 210. So he had 210 and 199 yards in two games against the Packers this year. Average it out, it's well over 200 rushing yards. And for him to only come out and finish with 99 on the day, you know, that was a little bit of disappointment, too, because you look at the season that Adrian Peterson have a year coming off that, not even a year, you know, just a few months at the start of the season when he came back from that ACL surgery, finished with 2,097 yards on the year, 9 yards short of breaking Eric Dickerson's all-time record. And then for him to kind of help his team get into the playoffs, they kicked a last-second field goal in the game Week 17 where he kind of could have went to break the record if the Vikings weren't really, you know, having any chance of the playoff hopes. But for him to come out in the playoffs, only finish with 99 yards, didn't get into the end zone, that was a little bit of a letdown for me.
Well, it was a letdown kind of coming in because they just played each other the week before. And, you know, you were excited that he had the big game, had the, you know, advance to the playoffs, and they got to play each other again. So before the Joe Webb injury, it's kind of a letdown game to start, you know, because you kind of figure the Vikings can't beat the Packers twice in a row, 2 weeks in a row, and in Lambeau. You just didn't see it happening to start. Then, like you said, then the Joe Webb thing happens, and you're just like, ah, you know, it's 17-3 at halftime. It might as well have been 77-3, Bill. That game was over. And they put the nail in the coffin with scoring that touchdown early in the third quarter, make 24-3. And then, quite honestly, the rest of the game was just about getting out of there without any injuries. Adrian Peterson, like we said, 22 carries, 99 yards. And just a quiet game, you know. Joe Webb, some of the passes by Joe Webb, Bill. I mean, my God.
They were bounce passes.
The bounce passes. But how about when he's getting sacked? You know, sometimes you got to eat the sack, right?
Yeah.
You don't throw the ball up in the air. Yep. I mean, Clay Matthews, did you see the eyes on Clay Matthews on that one throw? He couldn't get to it, but he threw it. He threw the ball up in the air like 10 yards. What is he doing? You know,
this
is a professional quarterback. He's 11 for 30 in the game. The Vikings obviously need to address their backup quarterback situation for next year.
You know, Aaron Rodgers, the Packers quarterback, he wasn't spectacular.
Didn't have to
be. He was solid, 23 of 33, 274 yards and a touchdown. Now, the score was only 24-10. Halftime, it was 17-3. But there was never a moment in time where I said the Vikings are still in this game.
It was over. Yeah. You saw the Packers make adjustments on Joe Webb running around like a crazy man. Mm-hmm. And once they made those adjustments, it was game over, you know? So
You're in bad shape when you let up two touchdowns to John Kuhn.
Yeah.
The fullback for Green Bay.
Exactly. The three touchdowns for the Packers were from Dwan Harris, rookie from Troy. John Kuhn scores the other two.
Yeah. No Greg Jennings, no Randall Cobb, no Jordy Nelson, no Ryan Grant, no JerMichael Finley. None of those playmakers all season long. Dujon Harris and John Kuhn were the two players that got into the end zone for Green Bay.
Yeah, not great for fantasy players, right?
Oh, absolutely not. No, no one had those.
Yeah, again, it was just a mismatch from the get-go, and they just cruised to victory. And, you know, let's see what happens. It'll be a lot more interesting this week when they go to Candlestick.
Now, the Vikings finished 10-6 this year. Fans, are they disappointed or are they satisfied? Did they exceed the expectations with this team this year?
I think they exceeded expectations on the season.
Yeah.
But that really stinks, man. If you're riding the high of a couple of strong games, they beat the Texans and the Packers to get into the playoffs. They know they have an uphill battle at Lambeau. But then an hour before the game, their quarterback's out.
Right.
You know? And that's a punch to the gut if you're a Vikings fan, don't you think?
Absolutely.
So then you just kind of see the game unfold. It's a tough way to end the season.
What did the Vikings finish with? Three wins last year, right? So they finished with 10 this year. Not bad.
Yeah. No, and they obviously have the most special playmaker in all of football on their team. Mm-hmm. I've never been a believer in Christian Ponder, and we just ripped Joe Webb, but Christian Ponder is not like some incredible upgrade, to be honest.
Well, Leslie Frazier came out today and said Christian Ponder, without a doubt, is our starting quarterback next year.
Well, what's he supposed to say?
I know.
But I guess if I'm a Vikings fan, my point is this. You got a healthy Adrian Peterson, obviously. Percy Harvin will be back next year. I mean,
hopefully.
We forgot all about him, right? I mean, hopefully he's back healthy next year.
No, he might not be back with the Vikings, is what I'm saying.
That's a good point. But if they can get Percy Harvin back, I don't know. I would. You got to at least bring another quarterback in to compete. Or at least a backup guy because, I mean, Joe Webb's not going to get it done. And I'm just not a Christian Ponder believer. Never was. Never understood why he was drafted so high by the Vikings when he was drafted early in the first round. So, but again, all in all, I think if you're a Vikings fan, you were pissed off for a day or two, and now you reflect on the season. It was a great, exciting season for them.
Let's move on to Sunday's game. Baltimore Ravens beat the Indianapolis Colts 24-9. And yeah, this was the upset pick. We thought that I kind of convinced you that we should at least make one upset pick. We kind of both decided that it should be the Colts over the Ravens. And the Colts, they didn't play poorly. They just didn't get into the end zone. They had to settle for a lot of field goals. Adam Vinatieri missed one. The Ravens didn't really, blow me away with their performance. It was more of the Colts not being able to score any touchdowns.
Yeah, again, it was 10-6 at halftime, right?
Right, pretty close game. And the Colts were driving. Colts were driving less than 2 minutes left in the first half, and they had to sell for an Adam Vinatieri 51-yard field goal or something. The longest of his postseason career.
You're right. He kicked a 52-yarder.
Yeah.
His time expired, and you're like, yeah, they got a little momentum. But
right.
Another game where, you don't score a touchdown, you're not going to win a playoff game. And that's basically what happened. I will give credit. I've been bashing Joe Flacco for years now. And he did play better in the second half. Antoine Bolden was just on fire in that second half.
Flacco only completed 12 passes.
But in the second half, though, man, Bolden started to connect. I mean, he threw two touchdown passes in that second half.
Yeah.
One to Pitta, 20-yarder, one to Bolden. And he was just throwing him up there for Bolden, man.
And Bolden went up and got him. Anquan finished with 5 receptions, 145 yards and a touch.
Yeah. I don't know. It just seemed like Flacco, he made some plays and in the second half. And, I don't know. I wasn't, blown away by him, but you just got the feeling that the Colts weren't going to be able to score.
Right. Especially with what did you make of Ray Lewis coming back into the game during Baltimore's, when they're in victory formation and Joe Flacco's about to down the football? Joe Flacco, Ray Lewis comes into the game for Torrey Smith, who was like kind of their deep man, and did his little introductory dance when he's coming out of the tunnel. He did that on the last on the field for the last time in front of those Baltimore Raven fans.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. Enough of Ray Lewis. That's what I have to say. They really were shoving him down our throat this weekend, weren't they?
You really don't like the personal attention that some of these players get in the NFL.
I don't know.
You were very upset when Drew Brees broke Dan Marino's record last year, when he broke whoever Johnny Unitas' touchdown consecutive game with a passing touchdown this year. You kind of you get a little bit agitated when the attention focuses on just one individual player.
Do you see the Patriots doing that?
No.
Other than maybe Gronk every once in a while doing a touchdown celebration. I mean, you know, it's about the team, man, and you know, obviously respect Ray Lewis for just an incredible career, but I don't need to see the dance again, you know? And how about, maybe you can explain this to me, because I heard, let me ask you this question. The pregame dance when he comes out of the tunnel, okay?
Yeah.
And what does he call it, the squirrel dance or whatever?
I have no idea what he calls it.
I don't know what he calls it. Did you notice, that they have field turf there. Did you notice there was a wedge of, like, grass sod there?
No.
When he did his dance?
No.
Did you notice that? I noticed it.
I did.
Like real grass?
Yeah, he like threw like dirt and grass like all over the place. It was weird.
Yeah, that, exactly. So, Kevin, I read about that.
Kevin, you're alive?
I'm alive.
Yeah, Kevin. Oh. You woke up?
I've been hanging out with Ray Lewis.
Nice.
They watched the Super Bowl from the same place I watched the Super Bowl from. Your couch.
Oh, jeez.
That's all he told me.
Your couch.
But yeah, no, Kevin, I'm with you. I saw.
So yeah, he's doing his little dance, and there's a smoke behind him, and he's growling and dancing around. And I see that, you know, it's field turf, it's AstroTurf basically.
Yeah.
And there's a wedge, a giant wedge of grass.
I don't know where it was from.
I don't know either. But somebody, and again, I don't remember where I read this. Somebody said that he wanted to rip the grass up and smell it for one last time.
Yeah.
Like Russell Crowe and the Gladiator.
That's kind of. It's kind of lame, if you ask me.
It's kind of lame. They don't play on grass.
Like, no, well, if they played on grass and he, like, you know,
ripped up some
ripped
grass,
up a piece of it in, like, the corner off the field. And, and ate it or whatever. Chewed
like
on it a little bit.
Like Les Miles from LSU?
Yeah, that's fine. But to, you know, stage something. I just feel like in a moment like that, it has to be all organic.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? You can't just stage that type of stuff.
Well, that's, you know, and it's, to answer your question, Bill, when they put him in the running back position for that final play.
Yeah.
Initially, I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. You know, he's out there for the final time. But then he did the dance again.
Yeah.
And then I was like, not cool. You know?
Well, the original dance was all I
needed. The crowd was chanting, "We want Ray." And it wasn't for Ray Rice, obviously. He had two fumbles in the game. It was for Ray Lewis.
Yeah, and that's fine to put him out there. That was a nice gesture by Harbaugh to put him out there at the running back position. Just don't do the dance again, you know? I thought he was just going to, you know, they were going to hike the ball, kneel down, and he was going to start hugging people and go over to Chuck Pagano and hug him, you know, one of his former coaches when he was with the Ravens.
Right.
Instead, he did it all over again. I'm just like, oh, come on, dude.
But, yeah, the grass thing, if that's true, Todd, and he, you know, said something along the lines of, you know, in the week leading up, I want to smell that. Yeah, it's just, it's not organic, as I like to say. It would be off the top of my head, right? So for the Miami game, did you guys see any of our game against Miami?
Yep.
And the fans were kind of throwing snow up in the air and celebrating and all that. It's like kind of a, you know, something that doesn't happen every day. Maybe once every couple of years we'll get a game where the seats are full of snow.
Right.
It would be like me, you know, planting fake snow in the stands so the fans, you know, and choreographing.
Something,
you know what I mean?
Right.
It just wouldn't be the same as something actually happening spontaneously and naturally. I don't know. That's just my take.
I got you. That makes sense.
Put it this way, Ray Lewis will be perfect for ESPN and their broadcast team.
Yeah.
And I think they've already hired him, right?
I hope he becomes one of those TV preachers. You know? That's what I want to see.
I don't think they'll let him do that.
That's what I want to see.
He's got like six kids from four different women.
That's all right.
That doesn't really go well in religious circles.
You know, our good colleague, our friend here, Patrick Immig, does a great Ray Lewis.
Oh,
he does.
Phenomenal.
Does he?
Phenomenal.
Cold Hard Football Facts every Wednesday.
You know what? I'll see, you know, when we take our first break, coming out of that first break, I'll see if I can dig up some of his Ray Lewis for us to come
back.
Okay.
That's great. Past talented. He's funny. He makes me laugh. All right, Todd. Indianapolis Colts finished with the worst record in the NFL just last season. And here they are. They made the playoffs. So their fan base Were they disappointed, or did they exceed expectations?
They're fired up. They can't be disappointed about anything. Even though
11 wins this season, very impressive.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah, of course. And they got the best young quarterback in the game, you know, who's healthy, unlike another guy that we're about to talk about. So they've got a lot to look forward to there in the Colts organization. They do have to beef up that offensive line quite a bit. But, you know, they're just getting started, Bill. I mean, I don't think anybody expected them to get to the playoffs like they did. And they're just going to keep getting better. They might not have the same record. Like, they might not even have as many wins next year, Bill. That sounds crazy. But I think they're going to become a better team as the years go on.
Andrew Luck had 54 passing attempts. Joe Flacco only had 23.
His, you know, we'll have to pull up the stats, but his season reminded me a lot of Peyton Manning's rookie year. If you remember back then, I mean, his team was terrible. Now, they didn't get to the playoffs like Andrew Luck did, but Peyton Manning threw for a lot of yards, a lot of touchdown passes, but he threw a ton of interceptions, made a lot of mistakes, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he cut his teeth, and he gave him the opportunity to start right away. Back then, in the late 90s, the whole thing in the NFL, the big debate, Bill, if you remember, you might have been in diapers back then, was that
Pampers.
Do you start quarterbacks or do you sit them down for the first year? That was what they always talked about back then, you know, putting a rookie quarterback out there to start. That's crazy talk, you know. And I remember when they put Peyton Manning in, right, kind of pretty much right from the get-go, put him right in the fire. And now, of course, that's what you do. You just throw the rookies out there, let them sink or swim, so.
In Peyton's rookie year, he had 575 passing attempts, completed 326. Andrew Luck had 627 passing attempts this year, completed 339.
Okay, and what was how many interceptions did Peyton throw? Do you have it in front of you? Was it like 26 or something?
Peyton threw 28 interceptions with 26 touchdowns.
There you go.
Andrew Luck threw 23 touchdowns with 18 interceptions.
Okay. There you go.
Peyton was sacked 22 times. Andrew Luck was sacked 41 times. Andrew Luck had 4,300 yards, give or take a couple. Peyton had 3,700.
Yeah, pretty comparable.
Yeah.
Pretty comparable. I mean, you know, I don't want to go too crazy with Andrew Luck because he's got a lot of improving to do. I mean, a lot of these games, he's hovering around 50% completion.
That's not good.
No, and it's not. And, you know, I think he has been maybe a little bit overrated at times by the media, but it's, he's just an exciting player. He just seems so much like people want him to live up to the hype,
so badly.
And I think he's starting to. He's going to be so much better in the next year or two. So for their team to go as far as they did with him playing, you know, above average, but nothing incredible. I mean, I don't think he's the rookie of the year. I think you could easily make the argument that a healthy RG3 and Russell Wilson probably played better than him this year. The healthy part of RG3's season. So, but again, the Colts, if I'm a Colts fan, I'm pretty fired up because I know I'm set at the most important position for the next decade, and they're going to just put more pieces around him. You know, I mean, T.Y. Hilton was a nice rookie this year. Vic Ballard was a nice rookie this year. And they'll continue to go on. If I'm them, though, man, I'm loading up on offensive linemen in free agency and during the draft.
Totally.
Because their O-line was terrible.
Speaking of Russell Wilson and RG3, the Seahawks and the Redskins were the last game of Wild Card Weekend. Seahawks won 24-14. And I'll tell you what, Todd, the Redskins jumped out to an early lead, 14-0. But I really thought that the Seahawks were still in the game at that point. They scored 13 points in the second quarter. So going into halftime, it was 14-13. And it was very noticeable that RG3, Robert Griffin III, was not even close to being, I'd say, 75%.
Yeah, well, you know, they got off to the lead, and then he tweaked his knee. And I think the stat is, correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, but from the point that he did that, they only gained, I believe, 41 yards of offense the rest of the game.
See, that's the problem when your entire offense is focused around your one player, that being your quarterback. Because unlike teams where you have a running back and when you run the ball, the quarterback just hands the ball off. When RG3, you know, when the Redskins call up a run play, it could be RG3 running the ball on one of those, you know, read option plays where he just takes off if the linebacker falls to the running back. So even their running game is greatly affected by him not being 100% because you know he's going to hand the ball off. It's not like you don't have to worry about that option play because he couldn't move.
Yeah. I mean, I did not understand what the heck the Redskins were doing. As his knee got worse, there was that one time, Bill, where they had him run. They had him run the ball.
Yeah.
And you saw him just gimping to the sideline. I'm just.
It was like a skip.
Yeah, what are they doing?
He was like skipping to the sideline. And he had the lane. It was so obvious. I mean, he had the lane to cut up the field and get to pick up the first down. He just decided to skip to the sidelines.
It just was getting worse and worse and worse. And you could just see it coming. Something bad was going to happen. And, I mean, and we'll get to the turf here in a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're watching, especially when you watch the replays in slow motion, it's almost like they're splashing in sand when they're running.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're cutting.
Yeah.
Just the explosion of sand and dirt that's flying up from the ground. And you've got your franchise quarterback out there who's been gimpy for the last month. And he's getting worse as the game's going on. And it's not like you said, Bill, it's not like, you know, he's gimpy but the team's still playing well. Their offense ground to a halt. They couldn't do anything. He was, despite everything that was said in the postgame, I don't care what anybody says, he was hurting the team. He couldn't do anything. He couldn't plant. His back foot is the injured leg. He couldn't plant on the one bomb he tried to throw to Pierre Garçon. You just watched him try to throw like flat-footed, you know? So it was affecting his passing. His accuracy was all over the place. Mm-hmm. He can't run the offense, and they still are trying to run some of those running plays. I just didn't understand it. And then to see him crumble down at the 5-yard line there on the bad shotgun snap and not even make an effort for the ball.
Right.
It was just sad to see. You could just see it coming. It's terrible. Here's what I don't get, Bill. You know, again, it's not like he was healthy all year and he got dinged up in this game. And he's like, I'm good, coach. I'm good. They knew he's been hurt. He's been hurt for a month.
Uh-huh.
Not only that, they drafted another rookie quarterback in Kirk Cousins. Right.
Michigan State, yep.
Yeah. And when RG3 originally got hurt a few weeks ago, they sat him out of game and they started Cousins in a must-win game against Cleveland, and he got the job done.
Yeah, and he looked good doing it.
Yeah, so you know, if you're a coach, you know that you've got to have Cousins ready. Yeah, you always have to have your backup quarterback ready, but in this case, you better have him ready because you never know what's going to happen. And they still didn't go to him. It made no sense to me at all. I didn't understand it.
Who had the bigger brace, Ray Lewis's bionic arm or RG3's bionic leg?
You know what? Seriously, how much armor did Ray Lewis have on in that game?
It was pretty intense, that thing.
That arm thing? I mean, it's no wonder he missed that easy interception. You could hear
he could have flexed his elbow.
Yeah, you could hear the squeaking of his, like...
Yeah, he was like the Tin Man.
The Tin Man, yeah. You need a little oil. Ed Reed should have been squirting a little bit of oil like Dorothy on the Tin Man.
Yeah.
You know, he had that huge thing on his arm. The face mask in this day and age, what is the grill they wear?
I don't even know if they can see out of those things.
I think they just take the grill off of like a GMC Yukon Denali.
Yeah.
They take the grill.
Their face mask.
And they just slap it on a helmet.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Back to RG3. It kind of just felt sick to my stomach, you know. And there's just so many reasons, in my opinion, why they should have taken him out. And I just didn't understand it. And now, you know, as we're taping the show here, 4:41 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday, nothing's confirmed yet, I don't believe. At least when the show started, it hadn't been confirmed. But they're saying possible partial tear of his ACL again.
Right, which he did tear in college, correct?
Yeah, same knee. I mean, Adrian Peterson's don't come around every year. This is not the new trend, you know?
Yep.
There's a chance, and again, who knows, by the time – if you're listening to this show on iTunes, maybe by now the news is already out one way or the other. But there's a chance he could be out for a significant part of the offseason, maybe even bleed into next season. That's your franchise guy. Bill, even if you think you might get by and beat Seattle, which we haven't even talked about the Seahawks yet, by the way.
No,
they played a hell of a game. Even if you think you escape and win that game, do you really think – like, you're going to win the next three games if you're Mike Shanahan?
No.
So what are you doing? You know, you had a good season. You've got a viable backup. Get him in there. Try to save the game.
Yeah.
They couldn't move the ball.
At all.
No.
At all. Well, listen, here's what we're going to do. Before we take a break, what do you say? Eliminated from contention, do you think the Redskins, do you think their fans are...
I think they're pissed off.
You don't think they have good expectations?
No! As we tape this show, I am extremely angry right now if I'm a Redskins fan.
Okay.
Dude, the top player in the most popular player in the game right now, the top-selling jersey in the NFL, as we are talking now, could miss part of next season. We don't know. Because they didn't take him out. And because they're playing in, you know, 6 inches of sand. What is he do? What are you doing? You're a billion-dollar franchise. Daniel Snyder, put some field turf down.
You know, only – and you bring up a great point, Todd, because not only are the Redskins – the Redskins owner has, you know, the, I think it's like the top three franchise in the NFL, most lucrative franchises. So I think they're valued like well over $1 billion. You would think, knowing that you're drafting RG3, you would get field turf into that stadium immediately.
Bill, Adrian Peterson.
Immediately.
Adrian Peterson hurt his knee on that turf the last game of last year.
The Minnesota Vikings should have sued Dan Snyder.
Hey, how about defensive end Chris Clemens? Seattle's best pass rusher. Had, another, what, 13 sacks this year? He's out for the year. He blew his knee out.
Another lawsuit.
It's ridiculous. Did you see? Did you watch that one? No one's even talking about that.
No, because RG3 got
all the
attention.
His foot stuck in the ground. It was ridiculous. I don't understand it. I just don't get it. And I know back in the day they played this kind of conditions all the time, but it's a new age. It's a new era. And you've got this, you know. I was just sickened by that game, you know. We had three clunker games. At least this game, the fourth game, the final game of the Wild Card weekend, had a lot of intrigue and a lot of storylines and controversy. But, you know, I like watching Robert Griffin III play. I think he's an exciting player. And a big part of his game is that read option, like you said. And maybe that won't work in the NFL, and this is testament to that. But who knows if he can play next year? And if he can play next year, will he be the same type of guy? Who knows?
Right. Maybe not.
Don't know.
We'll discuss what Mike Shanahan should have done and also go over the top performers and the biggest disappointments from Wild Card Weekend when we come back. You're listening to Football Nation on Patriots.com Radio.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is your Bridgestone Tire headquarters in New England. We have thousands of quality Bridgestone tires in stock at great prices. Save big on such tires as the Bridgestone Dueler HL Alenza, Turanza EL400, the Dueler HT and AT, and the Potenza G019 Grid. And if you're looking for a quality tire to get you through the winter, we have Bridgestone Blizzak tires in stock right now. We have Bridgestone tires in stock no matter what you drive. Remember that we are New England's headquarters for top flight maintenance. With over 100 ASE certified master technicians on our staff, utilizing state-of-the-art diagnostic equipment. Plus, you'll find easy online appointments, comfortable waiting areas with free Wi-Fi, free shuttle service, over 65 locations across New England, and the best customer service in the industry. Check out our everyday low prices now on Bridgestone Tires and make your appointment today at SullivanTire.com. We're always here to get you there.
Like so many soldiers returning home from combat, adjusting to life as a civilian hasn't been easy for retired Army Staff Sergeant Ben Dellinger.
The hardest part was getting out. You don't lose your friends, but like basically all those people get taken away from you all at once. It felt like my life was over at times. Everything I thought I was totally different.
American heroes like Ben face many challenges when they return home. That's why, for more than 90 years, Bank of America has partnered with military organizations to support jobs, housing, and critical needs of veterans and their families. We're also committed to recruiting and hiring veterans, reservists, and military spouses. And for Ben, we partnered with Military Warrior Support Foundation to award his family a mortgage-free home.
This is something I never expected to happen, and I'm truly grateful to each and every person involved.
To find out more about Bank of America's efforts, visit bankofamerica.com/military support. 2013 Bank of America Corporation. Bank of America, N.A. member FDIC.
Ah, that is the unmistakable scent of smoked sausage in this Dunkin' Donuts breakfast sandwich.
Yeah, you mentioned that 4 whiffs ago.
True smoked sausage deliciousness must be treasured.
Hurry in today for the unmistakable taste of a smoked sausage breakfast sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. It's deliciously irresistible. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Stop by Dunkin' Donuts and get a freshly brewed coffee. America runs on Dunkin'.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank. Member FDIC.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the Red Zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Contractors, having trouble getting a construction bond? Did you miss the chance to bid a job because your agent didn't support you? Give me a call. My name is Brent Cross. I want to be your bond agent. Call 800-999-7345. That's 800-999-7345. Online at crossagency.com. Cross Insurance is one of New England's largest providers of construction bonds. Don't miss out on any more work. Cross Insurance, the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots.
And now Ray Lewis, mic'd up at Congregation.
Dear Jesus, it's Ray Ray again. Lord, please take away the tear in my triceps.
Heal him, Lord, oh.
And please, Lord Jesus, fill the gaping holes in our run defense. Lord, fill those holes. And please, Lord, please, Lord Jesus, answer the following question.
What time is the danger?
It's God.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there aren't any dogs in the house. Michael Vick used them all several years ago. However, I offer you some reassurance.
Yeah.
To answer your question, woof woof.
Amen.
Mic'd Up at Congregation is filmed before a live studio audience.
All right, that's good stuff from Patrick Imig from the Cold Hard Football Fact Show. You can hear every Wednesday right here on Patriots.com Radio. And, yeah, Ray Lewis back in action for the Baltimore Ravens, will be retiring after this season. Baltimore has a pretty tough game this weekend, though, against the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, yeah. Like we said, you know, Ray Lewis, he's definitely the spiritual leader of that team, and it's an aging defense to say the least, with him and Ed Reed. Terrell Suggs is actually no longer a spring chicken either, Bill. No. So kind of get the end of an era, and, you know, do we even have any dominating defenses anymore? I mean, that was a pretty dominant defense, that team that took down the Giants, what was it, a decade ago now?
Yeah, 2001.
I mean, in this day and age, you have to have the quarterback to win a Super Bowl, at least right. A hot quarterback. You aren't going to do it with Trent Dilfer anymore.
No.
Right?
No.
Safe to say?
Yeah.
Maybe a fluke every decade or two,
We'll see.
It's a passing game. It's a passing league, you know? And that's why I think if you look at the teams that are left, I don't know. I'm feeling pretty confident, Bill, actually, about my Packers-Patriots preseason prediction at this point.
I like that prediction.
Yeah?
Ray Lewis had 13 tackles in that game.
He did.
Against the Colts. But that is not actually – that's not our candidate for the most surprising performer of the weekend. It's actually his two teammates, Anquan Boldin, their wide receiver, 5 grabs, 145 yards and a touchdown. And how about the rookie running back, Bernard Pierce, 103 yards on the ground off 13 attempts.
How about it? Suddenly, the Ravens have a two-headed monster running back. Who would have thunk it, Bill? You know, you talk about Ray Rice, especially, again, we deal a lot with the fantasy football as well, and Ray Rice is a perennial top three fantasy running back, right?
Right. Yeah, of course.
And last half of the season, Bernard Pierce, rookie from Temple, who was a dominating force at Temple. Of course, it is Temple, Bill.
Yeah.
But the guy was a monster in college, and when he got drafted to the Ravens, I thought that was a pretty nice fit. But I didn't expect for them to trust him like they have been.
Now, if you think back to Ray Rice, earlier in his career, they had Willis McGahee. He was always kind of a timeshare running back by committee.
Yep.
Then 2 years ago, they had Ricky Williams. Remember, Ricky Williams came in one season, I believe it was. Last year was really the only year when Ray Rice was, you know, had that solo job all to himself. It happened to be the best year of his career. But I'm not really surprised that Bernard Pierce is starting to get a little bit more action. I mean, he had a 100-yard performance against the New York Giants a few weeks ago in the regular season, and I think the Ravens are gonna be using him a lot going forward, and especially if Ray Rice puts the ball on the carpet two times a game.
Wow, how about it? I mean, he had a rough game. He had the big catch, the 147-yarder where he got tackled inside
on the
5-yard line.
Yeah.
Other than that, 15 carries, 70 yards. But Bernard Pierce, a rookie in a playoff game, 13 totes for 103. And
not bad.
He, you know, I was surprised he was able to get around the edge too. He was more of an up the middle type guy in college. He had a little speed, so. That's interesting. You know, that poses some interesting problems for Denver this week, but very surprising. I was just surprised. I kind of thought when the playoffs started it would be Ray Rice's show again, and it wasn't.
Right.
And that's what surprised me.
All right, speaking of being surprised, who was your – we just did biggest surprise, didn't we? Anquan Boldin and Bernard Pierce. Yes, we did. All right. Speaking of being disappointed, did you say disappointed or did you say surprised?
No, we did most surprising.
All right, now let's do biggest disappointment.
Yeah, how about
who
Andy
is
Dalton?
Who is your biggest disappointment?
Andy Dalton in the Bengals passing game. You know, I wasn't expecting him to go out there and throw for 400 yards, but I was expecting a competent performance, you know?
I mean, he was too, especially with the way the Texans defense has been playing lately.
Yeah, and
they were like 27th ranked defense the last five games of the season.
His body language was bad. He looked confused. Part of it's the scheme, too, where they weren't throwing it to A.J. Green in the first half, but he missed him on a wide-open touchdown, you know, which could have won the game for them. Not a good day. I think he took a step backwards. And like I said earlier on the show, if I'm a Bengals fan, I'm a little bit concerned. I'm going to really, really be critical of Andy Dalton in year three. Not happy with his performance. Big disappointment, that Bengals passing game.
How about Adrian Peterson? Were you disappointed in his game?
Yeah, I would put him in there, you know, again.
99 yards, didn't get into the end zone, previously was averaging 200 yards and at least one touchdown in their two regular season games.
And it was just kind of a non-factor,
yeah.
Honestly. You know, it wasn't like, but he just never had a chance. Once they got the field goal to start, right?
Yep.
Had a couple nice runs, Joe Webb had a couple nice runs, and it's 3-0. And then before you know it, it's 17-3, and it's game over. I mean, really. And, you know, it wasn't like they were within a touchdown and he could just break an 80-yarder and then they were right back in it. You got the feeling it was just over. So he had a quiet 99 yards and a little disappointing end to his career or his season. But at least he's healthy, you know. That's a good thing. He made it through unscathed the whole season on that bionic knee. Unbelievable.
And then how about Mike Shanahan? You disappointed in his actions to leave RG3 in the game?
Good point. Yeah. Yeah. No doubt about it.
Well, let's talk about this for a little bit. We know RG3 was injured before this game, maybe for the last month of the regular season. He missed some time. We know that basically going into halftime, that he was pretty banged up, and it really showed, like you said, that they barely moved the ball on offense. Should Mike Shanahan at halftime said, "Listen, Robert, you got it this far. You've been doing great for us all years. You have a tremendous career, a promising, a ton of potential throughout your whole career. Let's go with Kirk in the second half. We'll save you for the future. You've done all you can do up until this point." Would that have been the right move?
I can't tell you at what point it would have been the right move to make the switch. But
just saying halftime, because that's like a break in action.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the logical point would be, you know, you have a 20-minute halftime, 15, 20 minutes, whatever. Get a doctor to look at them. And maybe they did all this, you know. But I don't know, man. It's not like, again, it's not like he was gimping around and he just got hurt in this game. You know, this has been going on since December 9th, Bill. December 9th. That's
right.
A month ago from tomorrow. Against Baltimore. On that same field, that's when he hurt it. He missed the next game against Cleveland.
Yep.
Played against Philly. Looked gimpy. Wasn't entirely impressive. Beat Dallas at home. And as you saw in that game, they won the game. You know, he was able to run the offense, right? He didn't have the burst that he had early in the season, but he ran the offense just fine. He couldn't run the offense once he did whatever he did to his knee, you know, when it was 14-0 or 14-3. He couldn't run it any longer. It was evident he couldn't run it any longer. They kept calling plays for him to run it, and they were calling some deep pass patterns. He couldn't play on his foot. I don't know what else to say. So at that point, your coach has got to be looking at each other going, okay, this isn't good, you know?
Yeah.
The argument I've been hearing is, well, they had the lead and all that. Well, that's fine, but they scored 14 points early in the game. They didn't score again.
Right.
So who cares if you don't have the lead? Put Kevin Cousins in there and let him try to milk the game. You know, get Alfred Morris going. Get some play action going. Something. They had nothing. I couldn't believe that they didn't go to Alfred Morris more in the second half.
That was shocking to me as well.
But he had a huge.
Then again, Seattle's defense is tremendous.
Yeah, and again, we really have slighted Seattle here without talking about them at all. They're clearly the better team. They're a red hot team. They got off to a slow start in the game, but I don't know. The whole thing is very disheartening, and I'm not a Redskins fan at all, so don't get me wrong there. But it just seemed like they really played their cards wrong on that one. And I don't care that, you know, the whole other argument you've been hearing the last couple of days, Bill, is, well, the player said he could play. Well, of course the player said he wants to play.
Yeah.
Players are programmed to play. If you don't play, you lose your job. Just ask Alex Smith, right?
Exactly.
So I understand that. But at some point, just with all the arrows pointing in the direction of sit this guy, it's the first year. He's been hurt for a month. He's obviously getting worse as the game's going on. The turf is a mess. You've had a good season. You've got a viable backup quarterback who played just a few weeks ago. You know, it all pointed to getting him out of there, and they didn't. They should have hit his helmet. They should have taken his helmet away from him if they had to.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Couldn't agree with you more, actually. And now here we are sitting, and we don't, you know, early reports are that he tore his ACL.
Now, if you want to take the other side of this story, Bill, remember Jay Cutler last year? Was it last year when he pulled himself out of the game?
Jay Cutler, LaDainian Tomlinson did it.
Yeah.
A few players have done this, so I know exactly what you're going to say.
Yeah, so of course, you know, Cutler, and again, Cutler gets criticized because of his frowny face all the time, right? He's not a very likable guy to begin with, but, you know, he got heavily criticized for pulling himself out of a playoff game for an injury. He didn't
and the media, and even some NFL players, I know Jacksonville Jaguars running back Maurice Jones-Drew jumped all over Cutler for sitting out of the game.
Yep. So, you know, it's admirable for RG3 to want to stay in the game. He's got a history with this knee. He's the franchise of
the Redskins.
He's the quarterback, the whole franchise player. I just don't get it, man. I just think there's too much to lose, and hopefully the news the news so far doesn't sound good on his knee, but hopefully maybe they'll take a closer look and it won't be so bad that he has to have reconstructive knee surgery. If you have to have knee surgery again on that same knee that he blew out in college, that's tough, man. That's really, really tough. And I don't know. Just ended it sour note, man. It's bad taste in my mouth to end the weekend. I don't know about you, but I kind of felt wrong about that.
You said that we kind of were slighting the Seattle Seahawks without talking about them a whole lot. What do you say we do that right now? Let's go over some of the studs from this past weekend. Start off with Seattle's running back Marshawn Lynch. He was in beast mode wild card weekend. 20 carries, 132 yards, and a touchdown.
How about it? How about him just bowling over people? I mean,
he really is amazing to watch.
He is.
I mean, you watch some running backs in the league, and they do it with their speed or their agility or make guys miss, but he just runs over people.
Yeah, he goes downhill, right, as the old yeah. saying goes. And he's a big boy, man. He's a big, big, powerful boy. And that one run when he got outside for that touchdown, he had Russell Wilson kind of helping him out a little bit.
Right.
I mean, once he got to the 15, 10-yard line, he had such a head of steam. You're just – before you could even see how many Redskins were in between the 10 and the goal line to stop him, you knew he was scoring. He put his shoulder pads down, and he was going to score come hell or high water. Fun player to watch, and Falcons definitely have their hands full this week.
And then the other stud of the week was Arian Foster from the Houston Texans. He had a – what did he have? 32 carries, 140 yards, and a touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, he's the the workhorse back in the AFC. Basically,
right.
Those are your two workhorse backs. You know,
yeah.
The two of them and Adrian Peterson are the three guys that, kind of throwbacks, to the old Emmitt Smith days.
Right.
And as the Texans, as Arian Foster goes, the Texans go. And they're going to have to get him rolling big time against the Patriots if they want to have any chance of winning the game. I'm not a big believer in Matt Schaub. And they need to feature Arian Foster, get him going, scheme for Foster, set up the play action, and see what happens. So they were able to do that against the Bengals. Again, they didn't score in the red zone enough for me, Bill. They scored one freaking touchdown the whole game by Arian Foster. It's not going to get it done in the next couple of games. If they're able to advance past the Patriots, they're going to have to score a few more touchdowns than one to win that game. So, but hey, he got the job done. He stepped up in the clutch, and that's what you like to see.
Now, speaking of Arian Foster and Kevin, are you paying attention? You awake over there? All right. Big article this weekend that has been causing a little bit of a stir in the Boston Globe. Columnist Dan Shaughnessy wrote an article about the Houston Texans and about how terrible they are, basically saying the Patriots have a layup this weekend. He said last year's game against the 8-8 Tim Tebow-led Denver Broncos was a more difficult game to get to the conference title game than this matchup against the Houston Texans.
Didn't he call them like a tomato can team or something like that?
Yeah, something weird. But Arian Foster took that article, maybe did some like Photoshop, cropped it down, and made it his Twitter profile picture, causing, basically like a media storm around this. This innocent article in the Boston Globe is now getting all this attention is... Probably, what do they call that when they post it up in the locker room?
Bulletin board material.
Bulletin board material. What do you make of that, guys?
I don't blame Arian Foster for doing it.
Do you blame Shaughnessy?
No, I mean, if that's his opinion, I think he has every right to stick by his guns. And...
I mean, let's be honest. The Texans, this is a more difficult game than last year's game against the Broncos.
Absolutely. But I mean...
Was he being facetious? I don't know.
Yeah.
But... You'd have to be, from outside America to think that the Texans are a worse team than last year's Broncos with Tim Tebow.
Well, the first line of the article, I love it, okay? Here's the first line of the article. The 2012 New England Patriots just became the first team in NFL history to get back-to-back byes before advancing to the conference title game.
And he follows up with a question. Could this get any easier?
Yeah. Yeah, tomato cans.
Yeah,
the
planets
the
aligning.
Texans. Yeah,
Patriots are pass and go, collecting $200.
I liked it. I thought it was an entertaining.
Read. I mean, I think it was well within his right to compose a column like that and to publish it. And I think if Arian Foster wants to take that and use it as motivation, I think I don't think it can hurt them in any way, shape, or form.
Well, so obviously, I'm not saying that he doesn't have. The right of freedom of speech.
No,
he is a columnist.
I'm just saying.
I don't think he truly believes this Texans team is worse than last year's Denver Broncos team that Patriots had to play to get to the AFC Championship.
I don't know.
There's no way he believes that.
I don't know. He might.
He may have written it, but I don't believe he believes.
So you think he's just trying to boost ratings for himself?
No, not at all. I think he's trying to be a little facetious.
Okay.
And just play with his audience, play with his readers a little bit.
Fair enough. Well, it's certainly got his name out there. Not that he needed that to begin
with. No, he absolutely doesn't need that.
But
I'm just saying, you know, you don't do this for as long as he's been doing it and think that the Broncos were a better team than the Texans this year.
I hope not.
Now, I think he may be right that the Texans may have been the worst 11-1 team in NFL history.
Yeah.
But I don't think they were worse than last year's Bronco team.
And I was, you know, I think Todd and I were, or maybe myself only, but I think I was on that bandwagon for several months now about Houston and Atlanta. Those were my two fraud teams. Atlanta hasn't played yet, so we'll see what they have to offer. But I don't see either one of those teams making the Super Bowl.
He says the Texans stagger to a 6-point win against a team that hasn't won a playoff game in 22 years.
Yeah, what was
all factual? He makes the point that the Texans lost to the Vikings at home, lost to the Colts who had nothing to play for, and then in fact lost their bye, which the Patriots took advantage of.
Yeah, I think what was the there was a stat where they've scored like what one or two touchdowns in the past three or four games or something like that. It wasn't good.
The Texans.
Yeah.
You know, he talks about how the Patriots blew him out just a couple weeks ago. And he even brings up the point where the New York Jets lost to the Patriots 45-3 a couple years ago. And then a few weeks later, the Patriots lost to the Jets in the playoffs. But he kind of negates that as any sensible argument.
Yeah, he calls
the Texans pure frauds. That's a quote.
Would they score one touchdown or two touchdowns?
The Bengals. They scored one in the finale against the Colts.
Yeah, right. None in Minnesota in the Minnesota game.
Right.
So, I mean, they haven't scored a lot of touchdowns recently is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that could be a problem.
He says the Texans have absolutely zero chance of beating New England here next week. That's a quote.
I think everybody
knows
stupid.
That this is true.
I mean, personally, I think that's stupid. I think when you get to this point in the playoffs, every team has a team to beat the team they're playing.
I don't know, man. J.J. Watt, I think he's going to be angry.
No, that's what I'm saying. Of course they have a chance.
I think Arian Foster is going to be extra motivated. Do you know how much of an effort it is to change your Twitter profile picture?
It's a lot of effort.
I mean, that's painstakingly hard.
But what I'm saying, Bill, I'm agreeing with you saying that they absolutely have a chance. I think it's stupid to say any team at this stage doesn't have a chance.
Bill Belichick, Coach Belichick, does such a great job of making sure that his own players don't give the opposition any bulletin board material.
So ridiculous.
Yeah, so ridiculous to do that. And then here is Sloshenday, and he's kind of just giving the Texans anything they want.
Do you think that Bill will now scold the Boston media and say, hey, you can't be giving these guys bulletin board material?
Has he ever done something like that before?
I don't think so. I don't think that's within his right.
Nah.
Kevin, to your point, I just did a little research, and the Texans have scored 3 offensive touchdowns in their last 4 games.
Which is not great.
That's just terrible.
That's not great.
That's not great. That is not great. No. Good news for Shane Graham, their kicker, though. He gets a lot of field goals.
Yeah, but
he might need to kick 9 or 10 field goals to beat the Patriots, however.
Yeah, no, I don't think field goal. They need to score. I think two things need to happen. They need to score touchdowns, obviously, and take advantage of their red zone possessions. And I just think there are some people, and we discussed this today earlier on Patriots.com radio, a couple of the PFW writers feel that Houston can get out of here with a win even if Schaub plays, we'll say, mediocre. I think he needs to play well in order for them to win. I think he needs to go out and throw for 250-plus yards and at least a score and not throw any picks for them to win.
We'll get into our preview stuff on Thursday.
Okay.
Still plenty of time to digest what happened this weekend and look ahead to this upcoming weekend.
Yeah, his picks, guys, too, have been killers. Like, you know, he had the pick 6 in the Bengals game. I think that was the Bengals' only touchdown, right?
It was their only touchdown.
And that gave
them
the lead at the time.
Right.
And then he threw, if memory serves me right, in that Indianapolis game, he threw a couple crippling interceptions.
And in the Minnesota game.
Yeah.
Minnesota's defense is terrible.
You know, interceptions where Houston had been moving the ball and looked like they were going to get some sort of points, and all of a sudden it's going the other way. So we'll see.
You know, I'm not saying I don't agree that the Texans have 0% of chance winning the game. What I really don't agree with is the fact that he claims the Broncos, that game was harder last year than the Texans will be this week.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Not even the great Tim Tebow.
Yeah.
You know, Yeah, hey, I like the article. If, like Kevin said, if Arian Foster wants to use it as motivation, fine. It's not going to have anything to do with the game. Once the ball is kicked off, you know, Matt Schaub, it's going to come down. I agree with Kevin. It's going to come down to Matt Schaub. You know, he's going to have to perform above average, no mistakes. You know, you can't be throwing all these interceptions. It's just not going to cut it.
So, guys, I must have missed this too, but I'm following a couple little Twitter conversations here from some local media in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Shaughnessy tweeted at Arian Foster to, quote, bring his A game on Sunday.
Wow. As opposed to what? Him bringing his C-plus game?
I don't
game?
Know. So this probably isn't over. We'll probably hear a few more tweets as we go
on like
this
it.
Week.
Yeah, I love little Twitter feuds.
This
Nothing
nice.
Gets me more excited than watching NFL players or and you know, a columnist or media or NFL players going back and forth against each other. You know, sometimes that happens too.
And I got to tell you guys, the you know, Shaughnessy locally here is very respected as he is nationally, but he is not a, we'll say, a Patriots, you know, footy pajama wearing media member. He has been very critical of Mr. Kraft and this ownership and of Coach Belichick as well,
really?
At certain times, and doesn't have, you know, definitely, he's not the golden boy around here in the locker room, we'll put it that way.
What does Coach Belichick say? I've been to the Super Bowl 5 times in the last 10 years. What
no, I
he
think
say now?
He got, I'm not sure, I'd have to do some research as to who gave him the nickname, but somebody either in the organization or around the organization nicknamed him the curly-haired boyfriend, and I need to figure out who that was. But
I really don't get how anyone can be critical of the Patriots.
But I think, you know, he writes for the Globe, and that's where he cut his teeth. And I think the Herald at one point on the back kind of tabloid page, like the New York Post, had like a cartoon of him, you know, with his hair all over the place, and you know, the curly-haired boyfriend. So I got to figure out where that came from.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bill. You know, there wasn't a lot of on a national level. Okay, in Boston, obviously, there's a lot of excitement for the Patriots-Texans game. But I have to say, on a national level, not a lot of juice for this one.
No. You know,
it's kind of a rematch. We already saw it, 42-14, same venue, Patriots are rested, Texans are ice cold. This gives a little bit of juice. Maybe it's superficial juice, but it's a little bit of juice. And hopefully, by Thursday's show at 4 o'clock, maybe this escalates a little bit more. More tweets to talk about.
I love more.
What do you
tweets.
Think?
More, yeah. Maybe I'll throw some fuel into the fire just to get things going.
We need something. We need J.J. Watt to do something. Call out Gronk. Who'd win in that battle, by the way? Because J.J. Watt likes to go to the clubs too.
Does he?
Yeah. You haven't seen him on TMZ?
No, I gotta check that out.
Yeah, there's pictures of J.J. Watt. You know, shirt off, arms in the air. You know. Popping the champagne.
Wow. Didn't expect that from J.J. Watt.
I think he's trying to out-Gronk Gronk.
All right, guys.
I don't know if that can happen.
Before we go to a break, I got to correct myself. So he had.
You were way off.
No, I'm correct. Absolutely correct about his perception by the organization and the players.
But just made up that nickname.
No. The nickname is indeed fact, but I did a quick Google search, and it was given to him by a Red Sox player when I was a little bit younger. It looks like back in 2004. Crazy Carl Everett, nicknamed Shaughnessy.
So even the Red Sox have a little bit of
I guess the beef with the local teams in Shaughnessy, and I think all local teams have a beef with him, is that he can be kind of over-the-top negative. I mean, he'll be the first one there to polish your boots if you win a title.
Right.
But he's definitely can write some interesting columns.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Interesting columns.
He might be trying to get on the Patriots' good graces with this article. Because there is not 1 ounce of negativity in
that. And all this negativity that's in this town sucks.
Who's that?
That was Rick Pitino.
Oh,
I'm sure Shaughnessy
right.
was part of that one, too.
Larry Bird is not walking through this door, folks. Right? Is that that same press conference?
It was. And I'm sure Shaughnessy was at that one, too.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm just saying, all the negativity in this article is directed right towards the Houston Texans. No doubt about it.
We need more Shaughnessy. Let's get another column in here before the end of the week.
No, I'm sure. Well,
we're
this
seeing
one
tweets
was,
at least.
This
yeah,
one
so
was
follow
from
him.
January
I'm gonna,
6th.
I'm going to have to
Texans
follow
Texans matchup,
here.
Just what the Patriots wanted.
Do you follow Arian Foster on Twitter, Bill?
I do. Yeah, namaste.
All right. I'll have to follow him. I haven't followed him yet.
You know, for Arian Foster as a player, for someone that claims to be so down to earth and, you know, one with the people and the whole namaste lifestyle – I think he's in more Twitter feuds than I've ever seen anyone.
Hey, he tweeted.
Like, it's ridiculous.
Shaughnessy.
Remember last year when something with his, I think it was his hamstring, and some fantasy football manager was like, listen, I need to know what's going on with your hamstring. And he texted out, he tweeted out the picture of his x-ray.
Yeah.
And the anti-awesomeness x-ray.
Yeah, I remember.
Remember that?
That was great.
Yeah. I'll tell you, Aaron Foster, he, for someone that claims to be so good-natured, he gets into a lot of bad graces with some people.
But he tweeted, you know, hey, at Arian Foster, loving the avatar, bring your A-game to Foxborough on Sunday.
Whoa, uh-oh.
And then, but just to give
it's a good thing that he told him that, because I think Foster was planning on bringing a C-plus game.
And then he followed, or he prefaced that tweet by plugging a radio appearance of his and saying that everyone in Houston loves him.
We'll see.
But just to give you an idea, you know, we were talking about the background of this guy with the teams in this town. Just looking at his timeline, heading back a few days here. What's today? January 8th?
Correct.
I think so. Heading back to January 3rd, he tweets, Celtics are headed nowhere, and Danny Ainge needs to make a bold move to shake team up. Now, since then, they've won 3 games in a row, including over the first place Knicks.
Yeah.
By
the way, did you see the fight with Kevin Garnett?
I did, but he's just that just tells you though, like he's overreaction, super right. Negative central, and
that's his MO.
That's just his MO, and I think that's why some of the, I'll put it, the older crowd in this town that used to be part of that losing culture, you know, where the Red Sox hadn't won a championship in 80 something years, and the Patriots had never won one, the Bruins had, you know, went through a 30 plus year drought. The Celtics went through a 20-plus year. You know, they had that pocket of people, that generation,
right,
that sort of felt like we were the tough luck kids, the hard luck losers. And I think those people still tend to be pretty loyal readers of his. But my generation, for sure, just laughs because of how spoiled we are.
Right.
So I think that's just a little background on who he is and, you know, how he's perceived around town.
I gotcha. Anyway, I just thought that was funny. Arian Foster changed his Twitter profile picture to this article. I don't know how he did
that. Well,
if and when
they lose to the Patriots, we'll see what he does to his Twitter profile then.
But he's been creative, Bill. Remember when he had he tweeted like a picture of his MRI or something and got trouble?
That's what he was saying.
Welcome to 5 minutes ago.
Sorry,
Kevin.
Sorry.
Yeah,
I was trying to find Shaughnessy on Twitter.
It's all right, dude.
I'm sorry.
Listen, no need to apologize.
Welcome to the show,
okay.
Kevin. Welcome
it's
to the show.
Right. It's all right. But yes, the anti-awesomeness tweet, yes, we discussed that.
Okay.
But thank you.
Sorry, I'm just trying to stay on top of you.
Did you see Rex Ryan's tattoo?
I saw it. I don't know what to think about it. I don't even know if it's like one of those stick-on ones or what the heck the deal is.
For a whole day, I was waiting for the follow-up story that it was a fake one to come out.
People in the Jets organization knew he had it for a few years.
Well, did you guys watch the whole press conference? I only watched a piece of it.
I didn't watch
but
it.
He was all dressed up like in a shirt and tie, which is rare because normally
they make
you see
me
them.
Sick.
But normally you see them, you know, in the, you know, the hoodie or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so it was weird to see him all cleaned up and dressed up, long sleeves, you know, tie, all that garbage. But I kind of expected, like, wouldn't it have been funny if he came back, gave this press conference, just kind of rolled his sleeve up and, like, peeled it off like it was mm-hmm. a stick-on and just was like, you know, you guys are morons. And that's what I sort of kind of...
We're giving him way too much credit.
Yeah.
He was, do you know what the background of the story? Let me give it to anyone out there that's listening that doesn't know. Rex Ryan has a tattoo of his wife in a Mark Sanchez jersey.
Really beautiful feet.
Yeah, she has beautiful feet, right. We know that. He was in the Bahamas at the Atlantis, the Cove part of the Atlantis, which is like their exclusive, luxurious part of the little compound that they have.
But most men like to do a lot of things with those people.
A photographer came in and took, probably had like a ridiculously long lens, took the picture of Rex Ryan. So we're giving way too much credit to Rex Ryan to think that he pasted on a fake tattoo of his wife in a Sanchez jersey.
That's being a jackass.
It is. I think we're giving him too much credit. I think it's a real tattoo.
No, he
didn't know the photographer was there.
Yeah,
he's
at
on
this
vacation
point.
In the Bahamas. He's at the Atlantis. It's not like over, you know, it's not running around with a bunch of paparazzi following Rex Ryan. Give me a break here.
Yeah, at this point, you know, so we have, what, the foot thing, the tattoo thing. He's got a lot of stuff going on.
His wife is very attractive for an older woman.
Yeah, she's cute for a cougar, right?
I'm not into the feet thing, but she's hot.
But Susie Colbert was right.
What did she say?
Rex Ryan has refused to answer uncomfortable questions about videos posted on Deadspin.com that suggest he and his wife are linked to foot fetish porn.
Poor Susie. I'll never forget the day that I was doing a show and I saw that come up, and I muted the show and wasn't even listening to my own show and put that on the TV and just rolled on that. And I was like, this poor woman, you know, staring, poor innocent Susie Kolber, you know, looking into the teleprompter, being like, you've got to be kidding me. I want
to raise. The only Jets game that I've ever been to in my entire life was the game where Joe Namath said, I want to kiss you.
That's awesome.
That's awesome, right? Like, that's the only Jet game worth going to, is seeing that. I think any other Jet game not worth going to.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah! Huge compliment.
Yeah. I was at that game. The only Jets game I've ever been to in my life.
The kiss you line wasn't even as good as the yeah!
Exactly, the yeah.
I want to kiss you.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah! Huge compliment.
You know, if you guys were watching it on TV, that audio was playing throughout the whole stadium.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
And what made it funnier, too, was she's just like, you know, there are some sideline reporters, like, you know, for ESPN and other ones that are just like, they're hot. Susie's, right. like, cute, like, bring home to your mom, want to marry cute.
Right, right.
You know, so she just seems like this, like, nice, innocent woman, you know, and all of a sudden this guy's trying to, like, you know, Brett Musburger, you know?
Well, that was great last night.
That was phenomenal.
Speaking of sideline reporters, off the subject just a little bit, but did you watch the Rose Bowl last week? Right after the game, I think it was her name, Heather Cox from ESPN,
yep.
was trying to interview.
She was on the gig last night, too.
Yeah, she was. But, you know, after the game, and Kevin, you could probably speak to this better than I can, but the way I understand it is, you know, the networks have arranged.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, they go to the PR staff of a school or a team and say, I'd like, you know, A, B, or C, and then the PR staff goes into – you know, those players and tries to get, you know, the first choice or the second choice or the third choice. And usually right. as you're coming off the field, you're able to grab one of them.
Right. Well, she tried to interview the Stanford coach and he was trying. So she has the microphone in his face. He's being whisked away to right. the presentation area for
gotcha.
The Rose Bowl trophy. And so he tries to give her a few words and he just kind of turns his back, gets pulled away. And she's still on camera and she turns to the cameraman and she says, are you kidding me? You
know, that's awesome.
That was...
The coin toss in that Rose Bowl game was a complete debacle as well, with the official trying to get out the name of, I believe her name is Jane Goodall.
Yeah.
The monkey woman.
Yeah.
And so she was doing the coin toss, Bill, and she's there with, like, you know, the Tournament of Roses people and all that
right,
stuff.
Right, right.
And the official says, okay, here's our commemorative Rose Bowl coin. It's going to be flipped today by Jane. And then he goes, Jane Goodell. And I'm like, oh, it's Raj's wife. He's married to the monkey lady.
I mean, listen, I'm not the most articulate person in the world, but Jane Goodall, that's a pretty easy name to get to say.
I went to the Rose Bowl once in the 90s, Bill, and the Rose Bowl parade, what do they call it? The honorary parade person?
Yeah, there's something of the roses, yeah.
So yeah,
Tournament
of Roses.
Of roses. Whatever.
Yeah, that's what it is, Todd.
Master
You're
ceremonies.
Right. You're right. Tournament right. of Roses, something
else. Chichi Rodriguez.
Nice.
Oh, Chichi.
Did he have
the
his putter with him?
The Zorro golfer
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, did he have his putter with him?
Yeah, he did. It was awesome.
That's great.
Yeah.
But I'm with Bill. Like, you know, I'm sitting on my couch and I just do a triple take and I'm like, the monkey woman? Like, all of us said that at once. It was pretty funny.
Well, listen, back to the Rex Ryan tattoo thing. I mean, the Jets, they're just the gift that keeps on giving. You can't think of a more laughing stock in the NFL.
They need
than the
to
Jets.
Get Bill Polian just to give the old New England New York Jet rivalry another shot in the arm.
Because, they need something.
Because Bill Polian, because right now, Bill Polian fired... is hated up here. So that would just, you know, you had Parcells, you had Mangini, you
right.
got Rex. Now, if Polian would kind of every couple of years, you know, you need something to just kind of like reinvigorate that.
Well, they just fired their offensive coordinator. Rex Ryan says that the starting quarterback position is wide open. The Jets are just as much of a mess this offseason, even though it's only two weeks into the offseason, than they were in the regular season.
How
can
they bring
laughable.
Him back? How can they bring back Rex Ryan? Seriously.
How can they
bring back Mark Sanchez?
Why does Woody always wear a baseball cap? There's a lot of questions I ask.
Hey, Woody's
never
wife's hot, too.
You know,
I met them at the Super Bowl last year.
Who?
Woody Johnson's wife.
Oh, I thought you said Woody Johnson was hot. I was
like,
what are you talking about?
His wife's hot, too. She's like 20 years younger than him.
I'm sure she is. If I were that old and rich, I would have a really hot wife, too.
Holler for a dollar.
That's how it goes. But unfortunately, I'm not. I'm not old nor rich. So
there you go.
It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, so the Jets fire their offensive coordinator. Now, there's still teams out there looking for head coaches. The Eagles haven't hired anyone. Chip Kelly was interviewed by Philadelphia and the Cleveland Browns. He chose to go back to Oregon. I can't blame him.
I don't blame him either. But no. So much for Todd's hypothesis of him going to Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Oh, the Vic Tebow,
it's
Colin
out.
Klein.
It's out.
Right. Not going to happen anymore. Phil O'Brien chose to stay at Penn State instead of going to whatever NFL team was interested
in. And then
he
got financially rewarded for it,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah, sure did.
Yep.
Now, of Chip Kelly, Bill O'Brien, Oregon was what, Todd? What number in the country was Oregon this year?
Two. They finished number two.
Okay.
Yeah, going into the bowl game, they were four, I think.
And yeah, they had the final four in place, right, which they're going to have in a couple of years. It would have been Notre Dame and Oregon.
Right,
so
right.
Oregon could have crushed Notre Dame.
All right.
And
by the way, pretty much any team in the top 10 would have given Alabama a better game than what we saw last night. But
yeah,
that's just enough for another day.
Anyway, listen, the point I'm trying to make is Oregon, a top five team all year. Chip Kelly was their coach, interviewed by the Browns and the Eagles. Bill O'Brien did a great job with Penn State this year, right?
Yeah. But before you get to O'Brien,
8-4.
Remember, Chip Kelly did the same thing with Tampa Bay last year before they hired Schiano.
Right.
So Kelly, you know, he did it with the Tampa Bay. Now he did it this year with the Browns and the Eagles.
Yeah.
You know, when he comes calling next year, are the NFL teams going to listen?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Anyway, Bill O'Brien did a great job with Penn State. I guess the point I'm trying to make is, how is Doug Marrone from Syracuse the only college coach to actually take the jump to the NFL? And that's even better news for the Patriots again. The AFC East, now they have a new coach with the Buffalo Bills. The Jets are looking for a GM and the offensive coordinator. Suddenly the Miami Dolphins are like the second best team in the AFC East.
Yeah, it's good to be a Patriot fan, Bill.
Sure is.
I just don't see it. At least the Bills are, you know, ripping off the Band-Aid and trying to start fresh, whereas the Jets are just going to, you know, wheel in Rex Ryan and his tattoo and his feet for another year.
Mm.
I don't understand what their plan is.
The last hot topic from the NFL the last few days I want to get to before we take a break. Did you see after the Redskins-Seahawks game, did you see Trent Williams, the Redskins' old lineman, like kind of smush Richard Sherman, the cornerback from the Seahawks, right in the face?
Yeah.
That was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, he something tells me Sherman might have had a few things to say to prompt that action.
Now, Patriot fans, you guys know him for when that whole "you mad bro" to Tom Brady thing after that game. Kevin, you remember that?
I do. I was on the field. I didn't see that happen in person, but I was on the field in the scrum somewhere.
Right. So not only does Richard Sherman get things done during the game, but apparently he's got a lot to say after the game. So we'll look to see if anything happens between him and the Falcons this weekend.
Yeah, well, he's lucky to be playing anyway, right?
Yeah, he got the thing overturned.
I never heard Roger Goodell overturning a suspension before, but Sherman, very lucky in that situation.
Yeah,
he's playing with fire, that guy.
And it was even more curious that, you know, the other guy, Browner, just takes his medicine and takes it, and you're thinking, why wouldn't Sherman just take this suspension right away like Browner, you know, because odds are you're not, you know, exactly, you're not going to get it overturned, so you might as well get it out of the way before the playoffs. And now, you know, he turns out he didn't have to miss any time, which is just weird.
You know, maybe the NFL and Seattle's in cahoots about something, because remember Marshawn Lynch got arrested for DUI this summer? He didn't get suspended.
It's true.
Gave him a call.
Pete Carroll's in someone's pocket.
Someone's doing something. Who knows what happens up there in Canada?
Microsoft.
They're running the world.
Yeah. I tell you, well, one of my two destiny matchups is still in play, and that is Seattle, the Packers, the rematch.
Yeah, you really want to see that one.
I do. Now that the Colts, Broncos is out, so that's what I'm rooting for. So
yeah,
the NFL is trying to make that happen for me. That's clearly what's happening here. I'll tell you what, Sherman, he's playing with fire, you know, and he's just pushing everything over the edge just a little bit. Don't be surprised. You know what they say about karma, Bill? Don't be surprised if he gets burned for like a game-winning touchdown to end their season here.
Yeah.
Can you see it happening?
Yeah, totally.
You know, he needs to chill out a little bit.
All right, what do you say we take a quick break, and then when we return, our friend Kerry Byrne from ColdHardFootballFacts.com will join us, talk about some of the wild card games, see how his quality stats did based on this previous weekend of action. That's all coming up next right here on Football Nation. You're listening to Patriots.com Radio.
Todd DeVries and Bill Enright bring you the latest trends from the NFL on Football Nation.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is your Bridgestone Tire headquarters in New England. We have thousands of quality Bridgestone tires in stock at great prices. Save big on such tires as the Bridgestone Dueler HL Alenza, Taranza EL400, the Dueler HT and AT, and the Potenza G019 Grid. And if you're looking for a quality tire to get you through the winter, we have Bridgestone Blizzak tires in stock right now. We have Bridgestone tires in stock no matter what you drive. Remember that we are New England's headquarters for top flight maintenance. With over 100 ASE certified master technicians on our staff, utilizing state-of-the-art diagnostic equipment. Plus, you'll find easy online appointments, comfortable waiting areas with free Wi-Fi, free shuttle service, over 65 locations across New England, and the best customer service in the industry. Check out our everyday low prices now on Bridgestone Tires and make your appointment today at SullivanTire.com. We're always here to get you there.
Like so many soldiers returning home from combat, adjusting to life as a civilian hasn't been easy for retired Army Staff Sergeant Ben Dellinger.
The hardest part was getting out. You don't lose your friends, but like basically all those people get taken away from you all at once. It felt like my life was over at times. Everything I thought I was totally different.
American heroes like Ben face many challenges when they return home. That's why, for more than 90 years, Bank of America has partnered with military organizations to support jobs, housing, and critical needs of veterans and their families. We're also committed to recruiting and hiring veterans, reservists, and military spouses. And for Ben, we partnered with Military Warrior Support Foundation to award his family a mortgage-free home.
This is something I never expected to happen, and I'm truly grateful to each and every person involved.
To find out more about Bank of America's efforts, visit bankofamerica.com/military support. 2013 Bank of America Corporation. Bank of America, N.A. member FDIC.
Ah, that is the unmistakable scent of smoked sausage in this Dunkin' Donuts breakfast sandwich.
Yeah, you mentioned that 4 whiffs ago.
True smoked sausage deliciousness must be treasured.
Hurry in today for the unmistakable taste of the smoked sausage breakfast sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. It's deliciously irresistible. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Stop by Dunkin' Donuts and get a freshly brewed coffee. America runs on Dunkin'.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank, member FDIC.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the Red Zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
You're as cold as ice.
You don't look at stats or chicken wings the way Kerry Byrne does. It's time for the cold, hard football facts, right here on Football Nation.
All right, welcome back. Bill and Todd hanging out with you, and we are joined by our good friend, Kerry Byrne from coldhardfootballfacts.com. And Kerry, in the last Kerry, before we get into it, how are you doing, my friend? You enjoy the game
well,
this weekend?
I'm doing well, but you know, I'll help you know with my intro there. I have not had a chicken wing since yesterday.
Whoa.
I don't want that, no.
I thought you were going to say since 2012 that's your New Year's resolution.
Yeah, right, Bill. Come on.
That would be a good contest. See how long
you
can last without
a
chicken
wing.
How
long can I go without a chicken wing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do it for charity.
Fasting.
Do it in the name of charity.
Yeah, that wouldn't work well. I also tried giving up beer for Lent.
How'd that work?
Yeah, not too well. Okay. I once made it to St. Patrick's Day. I was very proud.
St. Patrick's Day.
You know,
anyway.
It's tough, guys. It's tough to be in Boston, give up beer for Lent. And
of course.
St. Patrick's Day. You know, come
people
on.
People start treating you like a leper.
No kidding.
Kerry,
I had buffalo wing sauce all over. It was awful. It was ugly, man. It was embarrassing.
In the last segment, Kevin played one of the clips from Patrick pretending to be Ray Lewis during like a kind of like a reverend ceremony.
Yeah,
funny.
Yeah. Ray Lewis at congregation.
Yeah. Now your show every Wednesday here on Patriots.com Radio, Cold Hard Football Facts from 4 to 6. And I know what Todd's thinking. Why does Kerry get to host a show with the creative Pat Imig, who, you know, does all these great skits, and he has to deal with me, who's like a, you know, bumbling, babbling buffoon?
You know what? Some mysteries are beyond me. I don't really know how to answer that. Well, listen, Bill, you know what, though, Bill, and I have to admit, and you guys are the two most knowledgeable people I know in two different ways, okay?
Yeah.
Todd, when it comes to college football, to know the backup third-string running back on Louisiana Tech.
He's like an encyclopedia.
It's a gift.
It's amazing.
It's not even knowledge. It's a gift from the beyond.
That's Ray Holly, by the way.
What's that?
Ray Holly's the third-string running back for Texas Louisiana
Are you
Tech.
Serious?
He was elevated to first string after injuries, too.
Oh, my God.
To a couple
other guys. You know what I mean? You prove my point here. And then Bill, to know, like, every little injury any player has. You know, I look at my numbers, so I'm not, you know. You guys have gifts that are beyond the scope of man. And, Todd, you just proved it.
Yeah, Todd's very, very smart.
Thanks.
I'm
going
to look it up. Hold on. I may call BS on Todd if this is true. What's the name of the
player? I wouldn't play that game, Todd. I wouldn't play that game, Kerry. Todd does not put out BS information.
No, I know he doesn't. I just praise him to the high hill, but I want to prove it. I want to prove it to all the listeners right now. So, Todd, who was that player?
Ray Holly.
All right, folks. This is live radio at its finest, okay?
Is it Ray Holly.
Louisiana Tech official athletics. Insane.
Yeah, there you go. That's amazing.
Let's see, blah blah blah. Position running back, and he born in 1990. Yep, receiving an injury last year. Yeah, I mean that is really impressive, Todd. I got to admit.
Well, I told you, Kenneth Dixon and Tevin King were the first two guys, but they both got hurt, and Ray Holly elevated himself and had a good year.
Yep,
so
Kenneth Dixon came back. He played well against Texas State, I see.
Yeah.
But you knew this. The thing is, you knew. I'm looking it up on the Louisiana Tech website as we talk, and that is actually stunningly baffling. You need your own game show, Todd.
Yeah, well, it's in the works. Talk to my agent.
Yeah, it's confidential right now. You can't say that on air.
That's right.
Kerry, let's get back to the wild card weekend. Todd and I were pretty bored by these games. Not a whole lot of excitement.
Nope.
If you had to take one thing away just from the winning team in all four games, what would they be? Let's go down the list. Start with the Houston Texans. If you had to take one thing away from their game against the Bengals, what would it be?
You know, they beat a very average team. I mean, this is what we said, okay? The statistical shaft was conveniently separated from the nourishing weed of contenders in the wild card round. You know, basically, including the Texans Bengals, the better team won. It's simple as that. The Bengals were a borderline playoff team, and we saw that where, for the second year in a row, guys, they couldn't really move the ball against the Houston Texans. It's simple as that.
That's an understatement.
Yeah.
What the heck happened to Andy Dalton in that game? I mean, I think he took a step backwards. If I'm a Bengals fan, we said it all show long. I'm a little concerned about my young Carrot Top quarterback there, because he had a deer in headlights look to me the whole game. I didn't know what was going on. He misses A.J. Green on an easy touchdown that could have won the game for him in the fourth quarter. Not impressed with Andy Dalton, and I'm kind of I was kind of like rooting for Andy Dalton. It's kind of like the under-the-radar guy on draft day a couple years ago out of TCU. You know, the smart guy, won't make the mistakes. You know, won't be amazing, but won't tank. He was very unimpressive.
Well, I'll tell you what, Todd, and I was a Dalton guy too, because when he got to Texas Christian, right, that team started to win. Like, they had their resurgence. It just happened to coincide with him being there, right? I mean, he was a big reason why they had those 11-12 win seasons out of a program that had struggled. Literally, the Texas Christian program had struggled since Sammy Ball was the quarterback.
Right.
And we're talking back in the 30s. I mean, he's was the best quarterback at Texas Christian since Hall of Famer Sammy Ball, okay? So he was a great college football player, and I, like you, had high hopes for him. But at the reality, you look at his numbers, he was an average quarterback, guys. And if you look at – I talk about this all the time. I talk about it everywhere. If you look at passing efficiency, it moves literally in lockstep with wins and losses, okay? And he was a slightly above-average quarterback with an 87 passer rating, and this was a slightly above-average team. That's really what it was. I know they had a nice run. Where'd they go? 7-1 down the stretch. But, guys, they beat, with the exception of the Giants, they beat the Chiefs, they beat the Raiders, they beat the Chargers, they beat the Eagles. They did beat the Ravens at the end, but, you know, this was not a great team. They are who their quarterback says they are. And, you know, he played a team with still a very good defense. Even though we're all down on the Texans, they were a better defensive club, and it showed. That was what you would expect to get out of an Andy Dalton-type quarterback. No more, no less. Simple as that.
Well, we went from that game, Kerry, and then you're kind of hoping for a little magic in the NFC North battle, and then you hear that Christian Ponder can't play. Now, Christian Ponder's not a great quarterback by any stretch, of course, but you throw Joe Webb in there at the last second on the turf there at Lambeau, and your chances are minimal that you're going to beat the Packers. Kind of a dreadful double-decker on Saturday.
Yeah, and you know what? And that actually, as you know, at Cold Hard Football Facts Insider, right, we do our real and spectacular picks, you know, straight up and against the spread, and that game was about a 7.5-point game, and then when the announcement came down that Pond is not playing, it immediately moved the market almost to, the Packers being 10-point favorites. And we
saw it at
11.
Back
in and said, you know, Joe Webb cannot compete with Aaron Rodgers. It's simple as that. And we saw that. That was a, you know, it would have been a better game. I believe it would have been a better game with Christian Ponder. Adrian Peterson ran wild over the Packers in two games, over 400 yards in two games. It's no coincidence that he only ran for 99 yards. The game that, you know, Joe Webb is at quarterback instead of Christian Ponder. So, you know, everything's kind of interrelated in football, and that really changed the dynamic of the game. Aaron Rodgers was that far superior. I'm actually surprised the Packers didn't win by more. If anything, you might be concerned that they didn't win by more.
You know what, though? We talked about that, Kerry. It seemed like they just went into cruise control.
No, I agree. But what I'm saying, if anything, that might be your only concern.
Yeah, the Packers were like, hey, let's get Kuhn a couple touchdowns here,
By the way, that Kuhn touchdown reception was quite a play.
It was.
He was, like, pinballing, bouncing off people. That was really cool. And you know, there's two positions football fans love, okay? Tight ends and fullbacks.
Yeah.
When a tight end catches a pass, every fan base in every stadium
they go crazy.
The same. Whoever it might be. For whatever reason, we love tight ends and we love fullbacks. I think it's because it gives us kind of a feeling of old school, smash mouth football, right? That's my own take.
You're thinking like Moose Johnson. You're thinking of Heath Miller.
Yep.
That type.
Michael Stott.
A Pitter, you know, a Pitter type, a Gronkowski here in New England.
What do they chant for Pitta?
No, I think, but you look.
Dennis.
You watch him run. People go cheer louder when he catches a pass. But Jason Witten in Dallas. People seem to me, this is totally anecdotal, Todd, not a Cold Hard Football fact, but I think fans cheer louder when tight ends catch passes. I'm going to measure this dynamic. I'm going to measure this someday and prove it empirically.
You have one of those things that measure
no,
sound
No, I don't,
levels?
But we'll work on that, Bill.
The sound meter. I'm sure they have a sound meter at Gillette Stadium. Kevin,
no,
don't
sure,
you control
don't
that sound meter?
Kevin, can we? Kevin's a video audio guy.
I am.
Don't you control the sound meter
at
Gillette?
I sort of do. I mean, I control kind of when it goes up there.
All right,
can you tell me if the crowd cheers louder when Aaron Hernandez catches a pass more than they do when Wes Welker?
I can try to look into that. I can break down some numbers for you.
You get your people on that, Kevin.
On the decibel levels, yes.
So, guys, when I'm watching the Ravens Broncos this week, when Joel Dreesen catches a pass from Peyton Manning, I'm going to hear Joel. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's something about it.
you know, John Kuhn, for a white guy, you know, he needs like a stepping ladder to get to that Lambeau leap.
Yeah, he's a pretty, you know, he's a little ball of muscle, man. I wouldn't want to get in his way.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, when he did, after the touchdown dance, he barely got into the stands.
Yeah, if I had to do the Lambeau leap, I need like a helicopter to pick me up.
A crane.
Crane, exactly. Maybe not a helicopter. I overstated the case.
All right, let's get into the Sunday's game, Carrie. Ravens, Colts. I mean, you know, the Colts just, they couldn't get into the end zone.
Well, you know, we talked about the quarterback. Guys, this is a great untold story about the 2012 season. We would never jumped on the Andrew Luck bandwagon because, you know, we look at all about efficiency. Do you know what team had the lowest completion percentage in football this year? That was the Indianapolis Colts.
Todd said that in the few
Yeah, we talked
ago.
About it earlier.
Yeah, I mean, they were a very inefficient passing football team. Andrew, you know who they were? And I got in a Twitter fight. Nothing uglier than a bunch of stack geeks fighting.
Was it with Dan or was it with Shaughnessy? Did you get in a Twitter fight with Shaughnessy as well?
No, but saying that the 2012
Arian Foster?
Colts, what's that?
Arian Foster?
No, saying that the 2012 Colts were the same team as the 2011 Broncos. A team that couldn't pass the ball very well. People don't want to hear that, but that was very inefficient passing the ball that caught some late game magic and rode that to a playoff appearance with a bad defense. The 2011 Broncos gave up 24.4 points per game. The 2012 Colts 24.2. They were both the least. They both had the lowest passing accuracy in football. They both caught fire late in games and were able to pull off some magical wins against bad teams and make the playoffs. And people don't want to hear you comparing the chosen one Andrew Luck to Tim Tebow, but the reality is there wasn't a whole lot of difference in the way those guys won games. There really wasn't, and they were both the lowest rated teams in football on all our numbers. And the difference is the Broncos beat a pretty good team in the playoffs, and Andrew Luck couldn't move the ball against a mediocre Ravens defense. That's who he was all season statistically, and what we saw on national TV was who he was all year, with a few notable exceptions where he got hot late in games. But he was not a very efficient quarterback this year, guys. He was not a very good quarterback. I know it's unpopular, but that's the reality. He was not a great quarterback in 2012.
Oh, agreed. We talked about that. He was kind of comparable. I don't know if you guys have done this study or not. Kind of comparable to Peyton Manning his rookie year. You know, Peyton Manning threw 28 interceptions.
28 interceptions, absolutely. But you know what? He got the ball downfield. He was more accurate. He was definitely threw more interceptions. But I am still not – I'm not sold on Andrew Luck yet, guys. I know they made a great run. I know people behind them. But I am not drinking the Andrew Luck Kool-Aid. I think Russell Wilson, we said it midseason, Russell Wilson is a better quarterback, period, than Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck may prove better long-term. But right now, no way.
Well, right now, of course.
No way is Andrew Luck in the same league as Russell Wilson.
You know, I think Seattle was – going into this season, a much better team than what the Colts had going for them. I mean, the Colts were 2-14 last year.
I agree with that, but you look at how they played football, and guys, it all bears out. It's all about that passing efficiency, okay? And let me run off the numbers. We get what we call passer rating differential.
Yeah.
How well you perform dominating the passing game, okay? It moves like clockwork, guys. The final eight teams in passer rating differential are number one, number two, number three, number four, number seven, number eight, and number 12 in passer rating differential. Almost the top eight. The difference is the number six Redskins lost to the number two Seahawks. Okay, so they're out. They're the one anomaly in the top eight. And the Ravens, number 12, beat an inferior Bengals team. So really, almost statistically perfect representation of the top teams in football. And the Indianapolis Colts were not near that category. That's why they got beat badly. That was an exact, perfect representation of who they were. You know, and they literally didn't deserve to go on. It's simple as that.
So, Kerry, you mentioned Washington.
Rookie
was...
left tackle, rookie running back, two rookie tight ends, and a rookie
bright,
wide receiver.
The future's bright, Bill. I'm not saying that, but they were not they were who the Broncos were last year, a team actually, Tim Tebow was a more efficient quarterback last year than Andrew Luck was this year.
Well, you know, you look at the Broncos last year, and now look at them this year. They're
empirically more efficient quarterback who got the ball in the end zone more and turned the ball over less than Andrew Luck. And anyone who wants to argue with me can argue all they want, but they're wrong.
So, I love the cold hard football facts. why bother arguing when you know you're going to be wrong?
I know that sounded a little. Let me share this, okay? And we did this, okay? If Tim Tebow's career, we got what we call real quarterback rating, okay? Tim Tebow's career real QB rating is 81.2. If he played this season and put up the same career average, 81.2, he would have been the number 14 rated quarterback in football this season.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. That's you know, because what you got to do, you look at does he turn the ball over? Does he get the ball in the end zone? 29 career touchdowns, 13 to 16, I forget the exact number of career turnovers. His type of play is underappreciated because he doesn't turn the ball over a lot. He's not accurate, but like I said, Andrew Luck was not accurate this season, and I'm just pulling up the numbers real quick as we talk. But the Indianapolis Colts in that number was a 23rd rated team in real quarterback rating, 72. Tim Tebow's career rating is 10 points higher than Andrew Luck was this year.
So if Tim Tebow played for the Colts this year instead of Andrew Luck, what would have happened?
They probably would have been the same exact team.
No.
That's like I said, they were the same team, guys. They were the same team.
Right.
What would have happened if the Jets had played them? They would have probably gone to the playoffs.
The Jets are not that smart.
But his career real QB rating was 26 points higher than Mark Sanchez this year. 26
wow.
points higher. He was such. It's embarrassing. I mean, and people don't want to hear it because they look at how accurate or how inaccurately Tebow passes the football. But if you look at his total performance and all aspects of the game, like we said it on the air last week at Patriots.com. Rex Ryan chose to suck. He sucked by choice.
Yeah.
And now we know because he has a tattoo and a man crush on Mark Sanchez.
So the 2-14 Jacksonville Jaguars, if they acquire Tebow this offseason somehow, you see a big turnaround there? You think he would start there?
Yeah, well, he should start. I mean, you know, if you, again, looking at that number, okay, they are one of the worst teams in football. They would certainly get better, more efficient play out of the quarterback position. The Jaguars are 29th in that number. They had a 66 real quarterback rating. Again, 16 points lower than Tim Tebow's number. 21 quarterback touchdowns this season, rushing and passing, and 22 turnovers. Again, Tim Tebow, 29 and 13 in those same two numbers. You know, you get more touchdowns, you get fewer turnovers, you win more football games. It's just pure football math. As simple as that.
All right, Kerry, final game of the weekend, wild card weekend, which really wasn't wild at all. The Redskins-Seattle game that
it's
was played.
Mild card weekend.
What's that?
It was very much mild card weekend. I like that. I like that nickname, Kerry.
I like that. You're always
mild
good for
card.
The headline.
That's good.
Which was so the Redskins played Seattle
yep.
on like a cow pasture somewhere around Washington,
wasn't that
D.C.
awful? I loved it.
Yeah.
No,
what was your take on
you
that game?
two guys tore their ACLs in that game.
But you know what? That's how football used to be played. You know, that's the way it was. You know what? Again, Seattle Red Hawks.
Football also used to be played with the goalposts on the end zone line with leather helmets.
Bill, you're talking to a guy who thinks they should go back to one platoon football and leather helmets.
All right. I forgot.
You know, I mean, old, you know, I honestly think we would reduce injuries if you were to play both ways.
All right. That's a topic for another day. I don't want to get into that.
With that said, you know what? Seattle was a better team. Seattle's red hot, rising, best defense in football. You know, they got down early because they are vulnerable against the run. But, you know, in Washington is one of the few teams in history that ran more than 2,700 yards in a season. That was a good rushing team. They got up early. Obviously, the injury to RG3 hurt them immensely. But Seattle's a very good, dangerous team, guys, who can beat anybody. And I honestly think they beat Atlanta this weekend.
I agree. Well, we're going to get to all that on Thursday, Kerry. I don't want to, you know, venture too far into the forecast. But I'm telling you, I've been saying it, it's destiny, Kerry. Packers, Seahawks.
Did, looking at you statistically, how they performed. They are easily, we know how they won big late in the season, but when you look at the numbers we look at that win or lose games, they are red hot, guys. They are scary good right now. They are scary good. Russell Wilson's very efficient, doesn't turn the ball over, best defense in football. They're big, they're strong, they hit people. I think they can beat anybody in the remaining field in either conference.
I'm telling you, Seahawks, Packers, and Lambeau, bring back Lance Easley, the replacement ref, to ref the game, or at least as an honorary captain to flip the coin.
Lance Easley? How do you remember that name?
Lance Easley. I don't know.
That's our boy.
He was our boy. Remember he partied? There were pictures of him partying afterwards?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you got to love Lance Easley. It's like Kenny Easley's
really
lost uncle.
Kenny Easley, the old Seahawks.
Exactly. Exactly.
Is he?
I think that Kenny Easley was black and he's white, so there's
apparently no relation.
Yeah, probably no relation there, but you never know. Maybe some way, somehow.
Well, we joked with on our show with Santa Claus a couple weeks ago, we may all be related to Antonio Cromartie pretty soon.
Or Ray Lewis.
Why, does he have that many kids too?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Oh, really?
He has 6 kids with 4 women, right?
Well, that's still not Cromartie territory.
Where's Cromartie at now? What's
8
his number?
Kids with 7 kids with 8 women, something like that?
No, I think he's got at least 9. I'll look it up.
Listen, there's going to be we're getting so off topic here. There's going to be listen to this. There's going to be a reality show with this rapper, Shorty Low, from Atlanta. He has 10 different kids with like 8 different wives. They all live in the same house. He has names for all their life, like Jealous, First Lady. That's going to be a reality show in like the next 2 weeks, and the FCC is trying to shut it down. But I just,
since
we're on the topic, I thought I'd bring that up.
You see society spinning down the toilet at that point.
Oh, it's terrible.
You know?
Good thing we have shows like Football Nation
he's
on
got
radio.
He just
to help
welcomed,
uplift everything.
He welcomed his 10th child in April of 2012. And
good
he
for
had,
him.
He has, quote, 8 babies mamas.
There you go.
That's insane.
Hey, you know what? Good thing he's an NFL player.
And he was famous because he couldn't remember the names of all of them. That's why he got in trouble.
If he didn't get an NFL paycheck, he wouldn't be able to afford all that child support. Unless he was like doing rich something else. You have to be rich to have that many kids. That's the point I'm trying to make.
I believe he had to ask for some sort of cash advance on his new contract to help pay child support. I believe that's why all this was then uncovered.
It was during the lockout.
Yeah, and it was all this was uncovered because of that. And then they, you know, asked him to name his kids and he couldn't. Which
they asked him to do it on what the hell's the HBO show during the summer? My mind is totally
Hard Knocks.
Hard Knocks. Yeah. There you go. But anyway, the point is that luckily the Jets are out of the playoffs. Hopefully, Cromartie gets to spend some quality time with all his kids.
That's the point.
Would he have that many of the quality time?
Yeah, quality time.
He could open his own summer camp with just his children.
Oh my god.
Oh, God.
Antonio Cromartie.
He almost has enough kids to have a football team on one side of the ball. He's got to get 11, right?
Yeah.
He's already got his little league team all squared away.
A couple more.
He's got a full basketball squad with a complete complement of bench players.
Yeah, a couple
so he
backups.
Just needs another one for a football team.
Totally.
The difference between Cromartie and Kevin is that at least Cromartie knows who his kids are.
Kerry, what do you have coming up tomorrow on your cold hard football
Sorry,
fact
Kevin,
show?
That silence was great.
Cheap shot.
Sure, silence.
That would be a cheap shot. Yeah, that would definitely be a cheap shot. Sorry. You know what? Tomorrow we're gonna talk to Texans chick Steph Stradley. We're gonna talk about she covers the Houston Texans for.
Oh, I follow her on Twitter. She's a smart lady.
Yeah, she's smart. She's pretty cool and really into the Texans and writes for the Houston Chronicle. We're gonna talk to her. We talked to her earlier in the season. See if the Houston Texans can recover from the massive Alabama Notre Dame style beatdown they suffered a couple weeks ago back up here in Foxborough. And we're trying to get Patriots legend, Hall of Famer, the greatest lineman of all time, Hog Hanner on the show.
Okay.
Who played college football at Alabama. And we want to talk to him a little bit about Southern football and also, of course, about the Patriots and how they look going forward and get his insights on good line play and basically talk to one of the great football players of all time. Working on that right now.
Okay. Sounds like a good show. You can tune in to the Cold Hard Football Facts Show every Wednesday at 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Kerry and Pat Amig go around the quality stats from coldhardfootballfacts.com.
It's going to be a good show.
All right, Kerry, thanks for joining us, and have a lot of fun this week.
You guys ever heard John Hanna speak?
No.
Oh, it's a treat. Listen.
This is John Hanna, Patriot Hall of Famer. Download the podcast now.
Now.
Download the podcast. Favorite. That's like, you know, that's like a different language to him.
But where did he watch the game last night, the Bama game? Love to be in the room with him watching that.
Probably eating some wings or something, having a few brews.
There you go.
Now.
That was a...
DeVries, get in here right now.
Oh...
All right, what do you say we wrap this puppy up?
Yeah, we're spiraling out of control.
Yeah, the last few minutes, they're spiraled nicely.
Once we start talking about baby mamas and rappers with reality shows, it just gets out of control.
That's what Carrie Byrne does to you.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Anyway, Todd and I will be back on Thursday. We'll preview all of the upcoming NFL divisional playoff matchups. We're excited for that. Any closing thoughts before we go? Kerry already left, so Todd, I'll go to you.
I'm going to go try to start a Twitter war with Arian Foster here when I.
Ooh, that's a good idea. That should be our mission for the next 2 days.
Yeah, he's testy this week, so let's try to get him into a Twitter war.
Kevin, what do you got going on?
Nothing. I'll just be waiting until Thursday. I'm literally just going to sit in this chair till Thursday.
You want to plug your Twitter? Maybe someone will start a Twitter war with you?
@Kevin_R_Collins.
That's not difficult. You can follow Todd on Twitter @CFFGeek if you want any information about the backup for Louisiana Lafayette. And don't forget to follow the official Football Nation Twitter account, FBall Nation. Thanks for listening to Football Nation on Patriots.com Radio. We'll be back on Thursday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Every football fan has a voice at footballnation.com.